Blog Talk Radio.
Difficulties, even if the telephones are acting up, if the computer is ridiculous and I don't get into the chat room until 3 minutes later, I'm still going to be in there because we walk by sight to see what makes your whole day glow, because faith is believing what you know ain't so. You know that. 310-982-4273. Press 1 to connect with the host.
Excellent. 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 And we just thank you guys for tuning in with us. Last week we had a phenomenal show. Every show is phenomenal. But last week's show, if you have not had a chance to listen to it, please go back. And we were talking about the unsung heroes of the civil rights movement. And we were able to share a lot of information. And I believe you truly will learn something from that show. The formatting for this year is a little bit different, and, you know, we always want to kind of shake it up and, you know, keep it exciting around these parts. So, again, thank you guys. Those of you who have supported us, we thank you. We truly, truly thank you. Just a few announcements here. The Day of Solidarity is amongst us again. The Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers will be taking place February 24th of this year, which is the last Sunday in February. And, you know, it's a national, international, you know, it's not just, you know, strictly for those of us here in the United States, but anywhere. And we all can celebrate it in some way or another. You can find people who are like-minded, even if it's only, you know, two or three of you or two of you. You can go out, have some coffee, or you can invite them over for coffee or tea or, you know, a meal or what have you. It can be as little as two people to as many as 100 people. You know, there are groups organizing around the country And the information will be posted on the website. I'm going to post it on our page as well as the Solidarity page on Facebook. But, again, we're asking everybody to participate, you know, in whatever way that you can. You know, this is not like a conference and we all convene. No, this is something, you know, it can even be one individual. If you want to get a shovel and walk down your block with a shovel and a broom and clean up your block as a day of service, that can be part of the day of solidarity as well. Again, for those that, you know, want to stay at home and celebrate with your families, you can break out the old Monopoly games, break out your old Nintendo, or play, you know, spend the day with your children or your spouse or everybody together. You know, maybe that day you cook dinner. How about that? And, you know,
yes.
Just, you know, go ahead, honey.
Yes, yeah, I was hoping you'd go there. Yeah, because being around atheists does not mean you have to sit around and talk about science all day and see who knows the most big words. All right, if you have a roller skating hobby, get together and go rollerblading. You know, black people play magic cards. Get together and have fun. You can have fun. You don't have to sit around and discuss evolution every single time you talk to another atheist.
Exactly. And the thing is, this is open to everyone. So this is open to, you know, non-believers of all persuasions, all races, ethnicities. This is open to everyone. We want to make sure that that's understood. Everyone can participate in this. Richard Peacock, Black Non-Believers of Metro Orlando, he had a gentleman that drove over 100 miles to be with him for the Day of Solidarity, and it was a Caucasian gentleman, and they sat there, and they talked about artificial intelligence and, you know, a number of different topics, and it was just the two of them for a cup of coffee. You know, again, you know, it's about, you know, us extending ourselves to one another, extending ourselves to the community. You can send in your leftimonials, if you will, send them in, and, you know, we'll post them, you know, videos, pictures, all of that. You know, all of that content so that we can show people that, you know, we do get together, we do enjoy ourselves and have a good time. We do have families. You know, we are family-oriented. We are community-oriented. You know, again, like I said, you know, last week on the show, you know, maybe you want to visit a senior home and speak to some of the older people there that want to tell their stories so they can tell you a little bit about our history and what they had to endure as young people. You know, I mean, there are a number of ways, you know, in which you can extend yourself, you know, whether it's a couple of people, a large group, you know, you as an individual by yourself. I mean, even if it's your own grandparents or great-grandparents, go and spend some time with them. I'm sure they would absolutely be ecstatic if you came and just to spend 2 or 3 hours with them so they can tell you about stories when they were younger and what they had to deal with. Go prepared with some questions, ask them what they went through during the civil rights movement. And, I mean, spend some time with them. They would love it. They would absolutely love it, trust me. And, you know, so, I mean,
yeah.
Just trying to give you all some ideas as to what you can do. It's not necessarily relegated to participating in a large organization's activities.
Yeah, see, and they don't just have to tell you stories. You might have stories for them. If they're elderly people, get on there and tell them about that Twitter. You know, tell them about what you saw on YouTube. Show them an iPad. You know how awesome a 70-year-old would think an iPad was? Be ridiculous.
Well, I don't know if you want to tell them about the Twitter. Because, you know, telling them about the Twitter, they may think you've lost your mind. But that's... Ooh, I'm on the Twitter, and I start giving some people the side eye, like, what's going on over here? You know, I guess I'm telling my age, too, right, Will?
Man, I still have a Tupac cassette tape. You know, I got my age.
Very good, very good. And, yeah, I said the Twitter, Rob. Yes, I did. And so, it is too funny, but... You know, we have a lot of great things coming up this year. We're going to be talking about issues not only pertaining to the United States. Raina, you know, wants to do a show dealing with the politics in Kenya, in which we are lining up some great, great guests to be on that show. I'm actually going to do a show in 2 weeks. About Black Latinos, Hispanics, and Mestizos and their African history. And the reason why I want to do that show is because of the issues that are happening in East L.A., in particular Compton, in which, you know, you have La Raza, La Raca, and they are basically pushing the blacks out of the neighborhood, out of the area. There's been a lot of race issues right there. And so I just want to take on black Latinos, Hispanics, mestizos, and their history. And I think I'm even going to upload a couple of songs from a couple of artists. So it should be really, really interesting. You know, guys, you know, I just think it's important that we reach out and we start to understand and learn how much more we have in common than not. It's important that we understand that. Next Sunday's show should be a real interesting show. We are going to talk about domestic terrorism and tyranny. And in that show, we're going to talk about lynch mobs. We're going to talk about white entitlement and white privilege and white insecurity. So it should be a very interesting show. And, you know, again, this is centering on the lynch mob. We're going to talk about the Freedom Riders. And we're going to talk about some of the things that happened. We're going to talk about Rosewood. We're going to talk about what happened in Oklahoma with Black Wall Street. We're going to talk about all of those different things. It's important that we understand that. And sometime soon, we're going to talk about the African history up in Canada. I want to talk about Nova Scotia and what the Africans and the Indians, but particularly the Africans, what they have contributed. So I think it's important. So we're just trying to expand our horizons. Trying to expand our horizons and give credit where it's due, and so that we can have a better understanding as to what's happening around us and what's happening in the world, and again, how we have much, much more in common than not. And so, you know, on that note, that pretty much, you know, what we're going to be talking about, RSS Feed, Raina Show, we'll be back next Saturday. We will be announcing the details of that, you know, creating the storyboard and putting that out there. So please stay tuned. And the Barbershop will be coming back with their next show, and we're developing that as we speak. And Mario had a great show this past Friday, and the Barbershop show this past Tuesday. That was a great show, too, guys. Go and take a listen to that. And Mario's show, they did the part two of Irrational Thoughts and Feelings and, you know, Issues of That Persuasion. Mario and Emmeline, great, wonderful bang-up job. And William did a bang-up job Tuesday as well. So, guys, you know, definitely go check out the archives and, you know, let us know what you think. You know, the information, you see us all over Facebook. You know, you can put it on the Black Freethinkers wall, send us an email, what have you, and we can go from there. So, on serious tip here, I want to, you know, talk about something real quick. A friend of the show contacted me yesterday, and we talked for, you know, a while. And basically, this is someone that's been dealing with, you know, a few health issues. And they were most recently diagnosed with vascular dementia. The early stages of it. And when they told me this, I was just absolutely numb. And, you know, my heart just goes out to this person, you know, giving them all kind of virtual hugs and kisses over the phone because, we have to start taking care of ourselves. We've done a couple of shows talking about health, and we'll be doing more in the future. I've even put out links out there where you can go get free physical and mental health care. It's important that you guys take care of yourselves. It's never too late. It's never too late. You know, and again, you know, we would like to encourage you guys to get your blood pressure checked regularly, keep it regulated, keep it in line. You know, try to start eating better for those that are eating better. You know, each one reach one. You know, maybe you can share some of that information with us, and maybe we can do a show on that. Get your exercise. Even if it's only walking around, you know, some type of big box store for 20, 30 minutes, get your exercise in. Try to get a little exercise in. And most importantly, for those of you that are on some type of, you know, medicine therapy, you know, take your medicine, take it on time, do what you're supposed to do. I know in my little regimen, my routine, there are certain medicines that I cannot take with food. Some I can take with food. I take vitamins, and I know I have to wait a certain amount of time after that, but I've put forth, you know, an effort to understand how these medicines can counteract with one another, and, you know, I have a schedule as to when I take what medicines. And, you know, again, just take care of yourself. I'm going to give you some of the causes of vascular dementia. This individual felt that the cause for their vascular dementia was that they did not take their high blood pressure seriously. And they, you know, had not been taking a medication, and, you know, it just caused problems. But some of the risk factors and causes for vascular dementia is high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, family history of heart problems, heart rhythm abnormalities, overweight, and smoking. And I'm going to post a link in a room in a second, and I am about to post it on the Facebook wall and send it out to Twitter. But, you know, again, you know, our hearts definitely goes out to this individual, and this person knows that if they need anything ever to please reach out and let me know, and I'll make it happen. And if I can't make it happen, I'll find someone who can. And, you know, we truly do love you and appreciate you. And you know who you are. So, you know, on that note, I just wanted to announce that and let them know how much I love them. And, you know, we are one big family here. So, on we go. You know, today's show, we are going to be talking about Black inventors, innovators, pioneers, and luminaries. And, you know, I had someone send me a note asking me why am I, you know, talking about these particular subjects. I just think it's important that we understand our history and understand, you know, where we came from, what contributions we made to society, and how some of these contributions are ongoing, you know, even today. And, you know, I found a lot of fun information, and I think you all will enjoy it. And for those, you know, if you have some input, know of other information, please send it to me. I'll be more than happy to feature it. You know, I can't feature everything and everyone, like I said last week during the show, so I'm just going to feature some of the ones that I came across and I believe that you all would enjoy. Now, we all know, and again, we're also talking about luminaries, so I'm going to start out with someone to that effect. All right, so we all know about Rosa Parks, you know, how she refused to give up her seat on the bus and kind of sparked off the civil rights movement. I mean, civil rights movement had been ongoing, but that just started up like a new arm of it. So, what a lot of people don't know is there was a young lady before Rosa Parks. And the Rosa Parks incident was staged, actually, and because they knew what the reaction would be, and that's what they wanted. But I want to talk about the young lady who sparked that, and her name was Claudette Colvin, C-O-L-V-I-N, again, Claudette Colvin. And basically, she's one of our luminaries. She's another pioneer of the civil rights movement. And, you know, yes, I'm tying it into last week's show so that, you know, again, we can kind of make that easy transition. But she was actually the first person to resist bus segregation in Montgomery, Alabama. And this happened before the Rosa Parks incident. It happened 9 months before. And basically, she refused to give up her seat on the bus. And the case, basically, that kind of started this was the Browder versus Gale case. And that was fought in the U.S. District Court. And basically, this ended up ending the bus segregation in Alabama. And the reason why they didn't feature her as opposed to Rosa Parks was because she was a pregnant teenager and she wasn't married. So they felt that that was not conducive to the image of the civil rights movement. So the NAACP, they kind of squashed, you know, using her as, you know, a representative of the movement, you know, given because of the social norms. I mean, it's somewhat the social norms now, but, you know, things are changing. But, you know, basically, she refused to give up her seat on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. And, you know, again, they had these different laws on the books in which you can be arrested for different violations like, you know, refusing to give up your seat or drinking out of a white-only fountain or trying to eat in a white-only, you know, cafeteria. And basically what happened was she was on the bus, and again, remember, she was pregnant. And she sat in the white section, and, well, she was sitting in a section, and if a white person was standing, they had to get up out of these seats and vacate the seats. And a white woman got on the bus and was standing, and the bus driver ordered her, Ms. Colvin, and two other passengers to get out of their seats or change seats. And the young lady refused, and she was removed from the bus and arrested. And basically, you know, as they were removing her from the bus, she was yelling that her constitutional rights were being violated. You know, she decided that day she wasn't going to take it anymore and she wasn't going to move. And she, you know, again, was screaming that her constitutional rights were being violated. Do you know what your constitutional rights are? Do you know what people can and cannot do to you? You know, that's some of the difference between some of the younger generations and some of the older generations, but I believe it's up to us to teach this and to put this information out there. But, again, you know, that's the first person, but, you know, she did give a quote. She said, I feel very, very proud of what I did. I do feel like what I did was a spark and it caught on. I'm not disappointed. Let the people know Rosa Parks was the right person for the boycott, but also let them know that the attorneys took four other women to the Supreme Court to challenge the law that led to the end of segregation. So that was her response to that. And again, you know, I think it's important that we start, you know, sharing this information and telling the young people, you know, where this came from. And and it's important that they know this. I'm laughing if someone was talking about slut shaming in a room. That's hilarious, William. And yeah. And but it's important that, you know, we understand the history and we share that. Another woman was the first black female doctor. Her name was Dr. Rebecca Lee Crumpler, and, you know, she is another pioneer in our community, and she was born in Delaware in 1831, and she was raised by her aunt, you know, and, you know, that particular aunt was dedicated to caring for sick neighbors and friends. And so basically when the young lady turned 21, she moved to Charleston, Massachusetts to work as a nurse. And she did that for about 8 years. And the nursing school, you know, the one that she was interested in apparently, didn't have another opening for 20 years. And so, but she was able to practice nursing without any sort of degree. So basically what happened is she went to the New England Female Medical College, graduated, and became the first black female doctor in the United States and the only African-American woman to graduate from that college. It closed in 1873. And she practiced in Boston until the end of the Civil War, and then she moved to Richmond, Virginia, you know, to help those affected by the devastation of the war. And basically, you know, she was able to learn about diseases of women and children. And basically, despite all the, you know, racism and sexism, she was able to live with other, you know, black doctors and care for the free slaves who wouldn't have had any type of medical care. So, you know, again, you know, we salute her. You know, she died in 1895. You know, it's just as important that we know, you know, who she is and the contribution she made to our community. You know, reminds me of you know, Dr. Nathaniel Hale. And, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar with Nathaniel Hale, he conducted the first open-heart surgery. African-American man conducted the first heart surgery. And it was just interesting because there was a hospital here in Chicago called Provident Hospital. And basically, he was at Provident Hospital. He helped open that hospital. And they had a nursing program, one of the best nursing programs in the country because, you know, we couldn't go to other schools. And as a matter of fact, other people, basically other races, they sent their nurses and some of their students over there to learn some of the techniques that he himself had developed. And, you know, this is someone that, you know, we definitely need to talk about. With, you know, Mr. Hale here, it's just, you know, hold on a second here. I lost my notes here. It's just, it's important for us to, yes, Daniel Hale, you know, it was important that, you know, we have that information and we know what's happening in our communities, what we contributed, and, you know, get the information out there so people can know that, you know, it's possible if you have a dream, there's something you want to do that you can achieve it. You definitely can achieve it. Patricia Bath, you know, she's an ophthalmologist and laser scientist, and she developed a technique for cataract surgery. And this created a new discipline called community ophthalmology. And, you know, basically the name of this surgery is called laser phaco. And, you know, she created the device and the technique, and it's being used to this day. You know, the interesting thing about her and her life was basically, you know, at the age of 16, this is when she decided that she wanted to have a career in medicine, and she went to Howard University in D.C. And so, you know, just to kind of give you all a little idea as to who she was, she wanted to bring, you know, she wanted to bring these services to Harlem, and she was able to do that because they didn't offer eye surgery. And she was able to come in and, you know, help them in the first major eye surgery operation at Harlem Hospital was performed in 1970 as a result of, you know, her efforts. So, you know, again, it's important. And her name is Patricia Bath. You know, Patricia Bath. You know, exciting. Another lady, Dr. Shirley Jackson. Now, this is something that I'm sure quite a few of you all would be interested in. Dr. Shirley Bath, you know, like many other, you know, African-American inventors, what she did was she went to MIT. She got her PhD from MIT, but this is important. What she helped to develop and create was the portable fax, touch-tone telephone, solar cells, fiber optic cables used to provide clarity in overseas phone calls. And here's the kicker. She helped to invent caller ID and call waiting. Now, if you all are like me, you use your caller ID, and you use it, you know, quite often. And see, we have Raina here. You use it quite often. Did you mean to put your hand up, Raina?
Yeah, I did actually. I was hoping I would have caught the tail end of that discussion about Ms. Colvin, but it's okay. Don't worry about it. I'll hold my tongue. We'll save it for one of our future talks on feminism.
Right. It does tie into feminism. I mean, you know, again, that's why I said it's not necessarily all about inventors and innovators. You know, we're also talking about, you know, luminaries as well. I mean, I was going to talk about Florence Kennedy And I've brought her up as well, so, you know, we can tie the feminism into that as well. And for those of you all who aren't familiar with who she is, Florence Kennedy was part of the feminism movement. She was a lawyer, an activist, and civil rights advocate and feminist. And she was born in Kansas City. She's one of our luminaries here. And, you know, basically she worked with these different groups. She was a member of Young Democrats. She was involved in feminism in the civil rights community. And basically she traveled the lecture circuit with Gloria Steinem. And it was just interesting. When men would ask her if she was a lesbian,
careful,
she
Kim.
Would
careful, Kim. You're gonna set off those conspiracy nuts who say that, you know, black feminism was just an invention by the CIA to destroy, you know, the Black Power movement.
Well, hey, I'm just talking about, you know, what she
I'm
has
just saying, you're gonna set those Negroes off, I'm telling you.
It's interesting. So we could talk about all of these people. And, you know, they've, you know, given contributions to our to our community. Someone in the room said, I ain't seen a caller ID in ages. Every time you look at your phone, whenever your cell phone goes off and a telephone number pops up, that's caller ID. Caller ID.
It's just amazing so many things we take for granted, you know, nowadays, you know.
Exactly.
You know, you just have to, you know, think about it, and you'll see these things all around you, you know?
Exactly. You know, I mean, look at the stoplight. You know, the stoplight, the traffic signal, that was invented by Garrett Morgan. Not only did he invent the traffic signal, he invented the gas mask as well. And another tidbit that a lot of people don't know, he invented a zigzag stitching attachment for manually operated sewing machines. He made an oil hair dye and a curved tooth comb. So, you know, he also had a newspaper. It's called Cleveland Call Newspaper. And so, you know, a lot of things, you know, the gas mask, you know, what they use, you know, in the military and all around the world for different things. He sold his rights to the traffic signal to GE for $40,000, you know, which, you know, they considered good money back then. But I just kind of wish that we wouldn't sell our, you know, our inventions and things off, because it could have just created, you know, so much more wealth. But, you know, that it happens, you know, because many of these people, what I will say is poverty, you know, can turn on those creative juices for certain people. We have a lot of geniuses in our communities. It's just that they don't have the resources and, in some cases, the motivation to put forth their information and their inventions. And sometimes they just don't know how. And that's where it goes back to the resources. Now, I'm sure many of you all have heard the phrase, the real McCoy. That someone wants the real McCoy. Well, that comes from a gentleman by the name of Elijah McCoy. And he had over 57 patents. And basically, his parents were runaway slaves. He was born in Canada and lived there. And he was fascinated with tools and all of that fun stuff there. But what happened is, in 1873, he developed a small oil-filled container with an adjustable stopcock that was capable of automatically oiling moving parts while machinery was in motion. And so no longer did railroad engineers have to stop every few miles while a workman went around with an oil can oiling all of the parts. So, you know, they didn't have to stop every few minutes. Again, that interferes with productivity. And so basically, he set up his own manufacturing company in Detroit, Michigan, to develop and sell his inventions. And, you know, when other people tried to create their own versions, you know, of what he was doing, but theirs didn't work quite as well as his, so people would say, is this the real McCoy? And they wanted one of his inventions. So, again, you know, look up Elijah McCoy, and you'll find out some information about him. You know, wonderful man, smart, you know, gentleman. You know, I'm just really proud of that. You know, now we know where the real McCoy came from. And I just think it's important that we understand that. Now, on the storyboard, you saw a picture of a gentleman, and it said, Gaming's Forgotten Genius. The name of this gentleman here is Gerald Lawson. Gerald Lawson, Lawson. And basically, he was an engineer, and, you know, he was a self-taught, largely, engineer, and became a pioneer in the electronic video game entertainment industry. And he helped create the first home video game system with the interchangeable game cartridges. And, you know, basically, you know, he was way ahead of his time. You know, this was before the CD or disc-based systems that we have now. But, you know, again, you know, he was one of the pioneers. He opened it up, and he was the director of engineering and marketing for Fairchild Semiconductor. And it was under his direction that the division brought to market the 1976 Channel F Fairchild home console. And, you know, people were able to enjoy different games. They had the cartridges, and that was the trick back then. Even now, you can get the systems for a decent price, but they make their money off of the cartridges, the CDs, the games. But anyway, basically, you know, he was honored by the International Game Developers Association. They finally acknowledged him, you know, for his, you know, contributions, definitely. You know, he was a pioneer. And basically, you know, it's just important that we understand, you know, who these people are. He gave a couple of statements, a couple of quotes about the game systems of today, and I'll read them. He says, I don't play video games that often. I really don't. First of all, most of the games that are out now, I'm appalled by them. Most are concerned with shooting somebody and killing somebody. To me, a game should be something like a skill you should develop. If you play this game, you walk away with something of value. How about that?
I have some problems with his statement, but I'll go ahead and keep reserved this. I mean, there are a lot of skills that you can develop. It's not just about killing people. I don't think he's played most of these games. Because if it were just about killing people, you wouldn't, like, there would be no point. Like, there's a lot of puzzles, and, you know, in some of these worlds, there are, like, multiple, like, outcomes, depending upon what direction you decide to take. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's problem solving. So there's a lot of other skills you can develop, too. There's a lot of different reasons people play games.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not one of them. I go straight for the Halo or Grand Theft Auto. Or car racing.
Well,
games,
even in Grand Theft Auto, there's problem solving and challenges to be overcome. You know? So
yeah, there are, yeah.
I mean,
the missions.
Unless, of course, you just go for the straight carnage.
Yeah, you spend a couple of weeks beating the missions, and then for the rest of the time that you have the game, you just have an open city to just go nuts.
Right. It's interesting, you know. And I don't play the games at all. I just don't have the patience. It's too many buttons. Give me Pac-Man and Donkey Kong, and I'm happy. But we have, you know, Lincoln Hawkins. Okay, and Lincoln Hawkins had, you know, Hawkins. He had 18 U.S. and 129 foreign patents. And he was the first African-American scientist to work for Bell Labs. And basically, it was because of him, you know, we were able to have universal telephone service because he co-invented a chemical additive that prevented the plastic coating on telecommunication cables from deteriorating. And in 1992, he won the National Medal of Technology, and he died that year as well. So it's important that we understand that. We've contributed quite a bit to this world. I mean, you have David Crosthwaite. He designed the heating system of New York's Rockefeller Center. You have Marie Brown and Albert Brown, and they co-patented an audiovisual door monitor home security system. You have Clarence Elder from Baltimore, and he has a number of patents, and he developed the OcuStat system, and this uses motion detectors to allow thermostats to be lowered in a building's unoccupied rooms. So, you know, you have a lot of genius out there, you know, a lot of people out here that have, you know, contributed to society. You have Otis Boykin, okay, and this gentleman here worked to improve electric resistors and made possible the steady workings of a variety of now ubiquitous electronic devices. And so basically, for this gentleman here, you know, he was born in Dallas, Texas, and he actually went to IIT here in Chicago on 35th Street, and he graduated. He was, pursued his graduate studies there, but they couldn't afford for him to finish school, so he had to leave. But, you know, with this gentleman here, he had his first patent was for a wire precision resistor, which allowed for the designation of a precise amount of resistance for a specific purpose. And in 1961, he had a patent for an electric resistor that was inexpensive and easy to produce. His advances was able to, you know, lead to IBM computers. And basically, his resistor helped incorporate a number of products, including guided missiles, IBM computers in the United States as well as overseas, the pacemaker. You know, it's his resistor that, you know, helps make these things possible. So, you know, he also created a range of consumer innovations, including a burglar-proof cash register and a chemical air filter. So, yes, some, you know, some people out here that we definitely, we need to know and acknowledge. It's just as important for us to know who these people are. Fred Jones, he invented a refrigerated truck, among other devices. Henry Sampson, he co-invented and the patent holder of the gamma electric cell, which makes our cell phones possible. And again, gamma electric cell, and his name is Fred Jones. I'm sorry, Henry Sampson. And look that up, definitely. And going back to what I was talking about earlier with Daniel Hill, Daniel Hill Williams, again, he was a surgeon here in Chicago, the first African-American cardiologist, performed the first successful open-heart surgery, and he founded the Provident Hospital here in Chicago. And, you know, definitely, you want to go and look him up, and you can find out a wealth of information about these people. Provident Hospital is still open to this day. It's still open to this day. It's right around the corner from another well-known hospital, University of Chicago Hospital. And one of the issues with Provident Hospital is they're not getting the funding that they need. And it's part of the Cook County Hospital System, so the county does subsidize, you know, that particular hospital, but they do take private donations for those that are interested. You have Percy L. Julian. Percy L. Julian, he was a research chemist at the high school, probably in almost every major city, you know, in urban areas named after him. He was the first to synthesize the natural product, and he was a pioneer in industrial-scale chemical synthesis of human hormones, steroids, progesterone, testosterone, from plant sterols. And you know, he just did a lot of work. He holds more than 130 chemical patents. And he was the first African-American to receive a doctorate in chemistry. You know, so it's just interesting. There's a lot of information out here about Mr. Julian as well. I just think it's important, again, for us to go out and look this information up and understand, where we come from and understand, where we come from. I posted an article a couple of days ago, and it was talking about who was the first African American. And, most people thought it was slaves. It was interesting. It was an article that was written by Henry Louis Gates. And this gentleman, his name was Juan Garrido or Garrido, G-A-R-R-I-D-O. And, basically it says here that the gentleman was born in West Africa. He moved to Portugal as a free man, stayed in Spain for 7 years. For those of you who do not know, Portugal and Spain, like right there, neighbors. And basically, he actually came to the United States, and he was one of the first black conquistadors. And for those who aren't familiar with that term, those were soldiers, explorers, and adventurers at the service of the Spanish Empire and the Portuguese Empire. So, he was a warrior, if you will. So, you may want to look him up. Juan, and I'll spell the last name for you guys, G-A-R-R-I-D-O. And look him up. I'm still doing some research on him. But, it seems absolutely fascinating, as I read information about him. It's just, it's important that we understand who these people are. And I also posted a PDF of Black Conquistadors. And so, you can see the history from that. And I'm also going to be using some of that material on the show, in which we talk about Latin America and their African roots. So it's important that we understand, where that came from. Now, again, we had a lot of people that, contributed to our, to where we are today, and that contributed to society, even though a lot of it isn't acknowledged, and we just need to know what's happening and where it came from. And I just think it kind of helps us pull things back into perspective, into its proper perspective. And having this information and being able to explain these things, it just makes our argument a little bit more credible. You have Abraham Galloway. And Abraham Galloway, basically, he was a multiracial gentleman there from the 19th century. He was a slave. He was also a brick mason. And basically, he wanted to kind of work on his own. And he had to basically pay the gentleman that owned him $15 a month so that he can work on his own. And he escaped slavery, and, he traveled all over the place. He went to Haiti, and he was there, and he tried to help them plan a revolt, and, that never happened. He came back to the States and returned to North Carolina as an abolitionist. And basically, they say he was an intelligence agent for General Benjamin Butler here. And, he was working as a spy. And, it's just interesting. He joined the delegation of black leaders who met with President Abraham Lincoln on civil rights for African Americans, which is interesting. And this happened in 1864. And he was he helped to organize the first Equal Rights League that became a nationwide organization. He was a champion for education for freed blacks, and he built a national reputation of a strong freedom fighter. In one article, he was called the Colored Napoleon, which is interesting. And basically, in 1868, he was among 15 blacks that were called upon to draft the North Carolina Constitution in 1868. He served in the state Senate. He put together a militia of men to combat the night-riding white mobs that terrorized black communities. And remarkably, he accomplished his legacy in his short 33 years. He died at the age of 33. And, again, his name was Abraham Galloway. So, you know, it's something for you guys to know. It's interesting. That right there, you know, I'll tie that into 40 acres and a mule and, you know, what happened there. And the short of it is Abraham Lincoln had promised the slaves 40 acres, which would have been land owned by the southern landowners after the Civil War. And he was promising them that land pretty much as a punishment, you know, to the southern slave owners or landowners. And he, and where the mule part came in was, you know, the armies were supposed to lend them a mule to help them build out the land. And what happened was when President Johnson got into office, he was sympathetic to the southern side. And that's how we lost the mules as well as the 40 acres. So, I mean, it's a little bit more extensive than that, but I'm just, you know, condensing it. You know, I want you all to go out and actually read up on it. You know, and during this time when this was happening, they met with General Sherman, and it was Field Order Number 15, and this was issued on January 6, 1865. And Sherman is the one that decided that it was going to be 40 acres, you know, that were given to the freed slaves. And, you know, just go out and you read that. Basically, they commissioned 20 leaders of the black community to Savannah, Georgia, and that's where they had that meeting, and that's where the term 40 acres in a mule, that's where all of that came from. You know, the mule wasn't for them to have. It was just for them to use to help them build out the land. So, you know, this is where some of this comes from. You know, you hear all these sayings, but many people don't know where it came from and, you know, exactly, you know, why it came about. I will tell everybody to go back and do some reading on the Emancipation Proclamation. It's important that you understand, you know, how that came about and what it actually was designed for. And that was over 150 years ago. So it's important that, you know, you guys go out, read that, understand, you know, where it came from, how it came about. You know, you're doomed to repeat some of these things if you don't know where it came from, you know, or how to combat it from being, you know, a reality again. I want to talk about some people from today, you know, that are making strides, and we need to know who they are. You have Kyla McMullen, Dr. Kyla McMullen, and she is the first African-American woman at the University of Michigan to graduate with her Ph.D. in computer science. And, you know, basically they said she would be on a computer all day and night trying to crack codes. You know, she was a young hacker. And so, you know, and basically, you know, it's just interesting here just looking at it. She went to the University of Maryland, Baltimore, and she got a scholarship there. And in 2007, not too long ago, 2007, while working on her master's, she began constructing educational software that taught kids how to make relationships between objects. She also worked in research involving the construction of virtual environments that navigate by sound alone. It was projected through Naval Submarine Medical Research Lab. The project is being considered for workers in dangerous environments. According to a survey conducted by the Computing Research Association, 1.2% of computer science PhDs were African American. That's roughly 16 people. 16. Wow. Her best friend, Dr. Idica, and is now the first African-American to get a Ph.D. in computer science from Purdue University. And Dr. McMullen is now one of the newest additions as an assistant professor to the Human-Centered Computing Division to Clemson University School of Computing in Clemson, South Carolina. She has held the office of both president and the vice president of the Society of Minority Engineers and Scientists and the vice president of the Movement of Underrepresented Sisters in Engineering and Sciences. So we got to give it up. Got to give it up for Dr. McMullen, and also we have to give it up for her friend, Dr. Akita. And I'll spell the young lady's name, you know, it's Idica. Her first name is N-W-O-K-E-D-I, and her last name is I-D-I-K-A. So, you know, I'm known for destroying people's names. I apologize in advance. And so, again, you know, go out and learn about some of these people. You have Maury Taylor, M-O-R-R-I-E. And his last name is Turner, sorry, Maury Turner. And he is the first nationally syndicated African-American cartoonist. And, you know, again, Maury Turner and first nationally syndicated African-American cartoonist. And he sketched the first black comic strip called We Pals, W-E-E-P-A-L-S. And it hit the newspapers of Chicago in 1965, and he described his first comic strip as challenging. The papers were very strict on what he could and could not include in an illustration. Only five major newspapers published a strip. It wasn't until the assassination of Dr. King that the comic strip was picked up and syndicated in over 100 newspapers nationwide. And he said it was inspired by Charles Schultz. And he's been recognized by a number of organizations, and he received the Sparky Award, which was developed in honor of Charles Schultz. So, you know, guys, go out. Maury Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R. There is a documentary that was produced regarding his life, and it's called Keeping the Faith with Maury. Keeping the Faith with Maury, M-O-R-R-I-E. And this is just a 30-minute production, but I'm going to see if I can find that. And if I can find that, I will definitely post it for you guys so you can see it and so I can see it as well. I didn't get a chance to look for that earlier because I would have posted it, but I'll look for it a little bit later. But, again, you know, these are just things that I think we need to know. I think it's important that this information gets out there. And, again, we can't talk about everybody, but if we can kind of get some information out there and people can go and you can research this yourself and find out who these people are and the contributions they made, you know, to society, it will lead you to other people as well. You know, you have another young lady by the name of Brittany Exline. Brittany, B-R-I-T-N-E-Y, Exline, E-X-L-I-N-E. Again, E-X-L-I-N-E. She graduated in a 2011 class from the University of Pennsylvania. She was a computer science major, and she is now the youngest black engineer in the country working for, you know, a software company. And basically, she speaks five languages, and she carried three minors in school. You know, she was only 8 months old when she started walking and was completing 100-piece jigsaw puzzles at 15 months. And I was like, wow. By the time she turned 16, she was working on Wall Street, working hedge funds as an investment analyst. And this is just, her story is absolutely phenomenal. Go out there and look her up, Brittany Exline, E-X-L-I-N-E. When she graduated from high school, she became the youngest African-American female student to be accepted by an Ivy League school. Phenomenal young lady. She studied anthropology at Harvard And while she was still in that program, she received a full scholarship to the University of Pennsylvania. I am sure her parents are beaming with joy. Absolutely. I'm beaming with joy, and I wouldn't know her if I walked past her today. So, you know, guys, go out there, find out some of this information. Absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. We have Doreen Lewis, and she was the first black woman to serve as mayor in Canada. And again, tying this into Nova Scotia. Absolutely wonderful woman. She had a PhD. She was the first black woman to run for a province, you know, in the provincial Canada, Canadian election. And even though, you know, her run in 1988 was unsuccessful, she represented the Annapolis West. It's interesting, you know, looking at this, but she was, you know, a nurse and a member of the Order of Canada. Just look up information about the freed Loyalist blacks who settled in the Annapolis Royal in 1783. And again, her name is Doreen, D-A-U-R-E-N-E, Lewis, L-E-W-I-S. And she's been recognized by national and international organizations for her political work and focus. In 1994, she was added to the Nova Scotia Black Cultural Center Wall of Honor. In 1995, she received the United Nations Global Citizenship Award, and she's just a phenomenal woman. You know, look up this information. Look this information up. You'll find out, you know, who's out there and, you know, the contributions that they've made to society. It's been absolutely wonderful. And, you know, I just say, you just look the information up. The show on Nova Scotia, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about Barbara Cuffey, Rose Fortune. We're going to talk about Lydia Jackson, Richard Preston, Gabriel Hall, William Hall. We're going to talk about all of these people. You know, it's just important for us to recognize, you know, the people in other parts of the country. Well, not other parts of the country, other parts of the world. So it's just it's important. So you have Dr. Helen Nash. Again, Dr. Helen Nash, N-A-S-H. And she graduated from the Meharry Medical School, as well as Spelman, and she was the first black pediatrician at St. Louis Hospital. And this was in 1949. Basically, you know, again, it was a lot of racism and sexism back then, and she lobbied to be a part of the all-male hospital board and to get them to increase the number of hand-washing stations at the hospital and provide new incubators for the newborns. And basically what happened was the change drastically reduced the rate of infections and premature mortality rates. Her other missions included approval of air conditioning at the facility, and she worked with the city mayor to decrease the amount of car batteries leaking lead in the local dumpster to improve life and air quality in the community. So, you know, she was an advocate, you know, for the prevention of child abuse and was an advocate to get services out there. And because of her, she was instrumental in getting policies changed that led to physicians reporting mistreatment of children by parents and caretakers. And again, she worked with the mayor for rat eradication after seeing many patients with rat bites. Just a phenomenal woman, just by, you know, insisting that people wash their hands. You know, she was able to bring down the infection rates. And another thing that she did was they used to put all the babies together in, like, this one big pen. And what happened is she lobbied to have the children separated, and that also decreased the amount of infection as well. It's just interesting. Just do some research on her. You'll find a lot of information, and you'll see the information about how the babies, the newborns, used to sleep in groups and how she had them change that policy. And, you know, again, the rates of infection decreased. She was invited to Washington University School of Medicine because of her exemplary, you know, performance. And she was the first black woman to receive that honor. It's just, it's interesting. She would see discrimination against her on patient charts written by other doctors. You know, it was just interesting. Right here it says, when she admitted her first patient to Children's Hospital, who was a little girl with typhoid, she found a note on the girl's chart from a white doctor that read, "Too bad Dr. Nash started treating the patient, because now we never know what she had." Wow. And it says the comment was a deliberate accusation that Dr. Nash was improperly diagnosing her patients. So, you know, it's interesting, you know, just little information like that, a lot that, you know, we've contributed to society. But, you know, we would never know if we don't go out and do the research. We would never know if, you know, people weren't bringing forth this information. You know, so, again, I encourage you guys to go and look this information up. You know, you have Mark B. August Sr. And basically, this is a gentleman that was from Haiti, and he developed the coin organizer, the portable coin organizer. So, you know, I think his picture is up on the storyboard, too. As a matter of fact, I know it is. And he shares this the intellectual property rights with his son, Mark Jr., his oldest son and daughter-in-law. So, you know, again, this was in 2006. Yeah, not too long ago. So, you know, again, you guys, you may want to go out and look some of this information up. It's just absolutely phenomenal. Well, we all know about Lonnie Johnson. That's the young man that created the Super Soaker. So, you know.
I took out a lot of beehives because of him. A lot of ant hills in the neighborhood went down because of this guy. Yeah, taking them out.
Oh, that's too funny. That is too funny. He just made this little gun with Nerf, shooting the little Nerf balls, a little Nerf gun. So they just came out with that in the past few years as well. He was a systems engineer, senior systems engineer at NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. So it's just, it's interesting. That one gun itself, the Super Soaker, it generated more than $200 million in sales.
You know what? Back in those days, we could, and you know, we weren't in the city. We were in a smaller neighborhood in Spanaway, Washington. We could go around and like, get in someone's car and do Super Soaker drive-bys for fun. You can't do that now. Everybody has a smartphone in their pocket that'll get ruined if you shoot a water gun at them. Little cultural complaint I have there.
Oh, that's too funny. Yeah, definitely. That is hilarious. And we'll be ready to fight if you don't pay for it too. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, and they'll want to charge you the shelf price, not the deal price that they got with the contract, not the $50. No, the $500.
How about that? How about that? You know, it's interesting, but that's how it goes. And they should have bought some insurance in the first place, but that's another story. But we have Janet Bashian, B-A-S-H-E-N, again, Janet Bashian. And she created a corporation called the Bashian Corporation, and that was in 1994. And basically, in January 2006, she made history. She became the first African-American female to hold a patent for a software invention. She invented LinkLine, L-I-N-K-L-I-N-E, which is a web-based application for EEO claims intake and tracking, claims management, document management, and numerous reports. Her company remains focused on innovation and a dedication to building proactive EEO initiatives with organizations. So, you know, it took some time, but she was able to, you know, achieve some success. And that is wonderful. That is wonderful. For those of you out there that have ideas and inventions, I tell you to go for it. I mean, you have absolutely nothing to lose. Absolutely nothing to lose. You have Thomas Mensah, Dr. Thomas Mensah, M-E-N-S-A-H. And this gentleman, he holds more than a dozen patents in the United States as well as abroad, and one of them is for the Patriot Missile Guidance System. How about that? The Patriot Missile Guidance System. He's from Ghana, and he's the chairman of Supercool Technology, which is based in Norcross, Georgia. It's just it's interesting. I mean, he's working with fiber optics and, of course, guided vehicle systems. Now, the interesting with the guided vehicle systems is, well, I can't even really get into that because the person who told me, I'm not even sure if this is public knowledge. Anyway, guided vehicles. No, you know, it's interesting. His work with smart weapons like the Patriot missile is considered successful or crucial to the success in the Gulf War. So it's interesting. He was the winner of the 2010 Percy Julian Award. I think we talked about Percy Julian a little while ago. So it's just it's interesting, you know, how all of this ties together. You have Elijah Abron, A-B-R-O-N, Elijah Abron. And basically what he wanted to do, he was trying to make paper fastened together without using the binders or the paper clips or the staples. And so what he did is he invented substrate sheets with removable strips. It received a patent for the invention in May of 2006. And what this does is this product binds papers together through a simple step process. Stack the self-binding paper, pull the strip, and the papers are securely fastened. And he has this company, Eli's Papers in Shreveport, Louisiana. How about that? And like I said, you know, sometimes poverty, you know, and frustration and a bunch of different situations can help you come up with some of the best ideas ever. So, you know, it's important that, you know, you know, we looked this up, and it's just, it's wonderful. It's wonderful to know that, you know, you have these different inventions out here. And, you know, some of the, and again, even with the stoplight, even though Garrett Morgan sold it to GE, you know, it's just nice to know that, you know, we played a part in that. You know, someone from our community. And, you know, we definitely, you know, we wish them well and their families. But you have Earl Bell, Earl, E-A-R-L, Bell, B-E-L-L. And this gentleman says here he's known as an inventor, building designer, and architectural theorist, as well as hip-hop architect. Now, I have to look that hip-hop architect up because I need to know a little bit more about that. But they,
yeah, what is you're building turntables? What are you making?
A bag or something.
Yeah, I don't know what this guy is making.
Right.
You walk into the building and, like, the lobby says Wu-Tang ain't nothing there.
It ain't. It definitely ain't. I've seen the music videos.
Oh my gosh,
that is hilarious. Right, and it just says here that he is the sole inventor of SASU technology, and this is a liquid hydraulic electrical display for showing information. Slide skin technology, ergonomic chair system, KET ambit technology, internal electrical mechanical mechanism for quantification and has others that are being reviewed by the United States Patent and Trademark Offices. Those are some of the patents that he holds. So that's just remarkable. Absolutely remarkable.
Okay, can I just make one point? Because not that any of the people that you're talking about fit this scenario, but I just want to point out to people that having a patent doesn't necessarily mean anything if it doesn't work. Because there are a lot of people out here who have, if you look on their like CVs, they have like a list of patents, and none of them have any hope. You know what I mean? Of ever being built or implemented, because they won't work.
Right.
So, not that any of these people have any of those problems, but I've seen a lot of folks in this community bring up certain people, you know, certain HIV AIDS denialists, shall we say?
Right.
You know, we talk about certain people who have patents on this and that. And they get bantied around mainly because they're black people, and you come to find out that these things that they have patents on have absolutely zero hope of ever working. So
that's true. That is true. That's the interesting.
I'm sorry.
Part.
Carry on. I just thought I would bring that up because I get tired of seeing that, you know, and it's just a really bad argument to think that just because someone has a bunch of patents that somehow makes them an expert or, you know, something along those lines. So you have to look at the nature of the patents and whether or not those things have any probability of working. So that's my only point.
There you go. And, you know, it was this one gentleman that had a patent on some type of liquid concoction, some type of chemical concoction that he created and was adding to iced tea and was claiming that people were being healed from a variety of different ailments, including HIV. And they shut him down quickly because he was selling it. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about today.
I know. I was just, like I said, I was just bringing up that point.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But no, I was trying to give a real, real world, real life example there. You have Andre McCarter, McCarter, Andre McCarter. And basically, this gentleman here, you know, apparently he's extremely athletic, but he patented an invention called Touch Glove. And with the touch glove, it's a training glove that lessens the athlete's sense of touch in certain areas of the hand, the no-touch areas, therefore training the athlete to control the ball with his fingertips. And he received a patent for this invention in April of 2000. So, again, you know, I didn't want to just talk about, you know, all of the old inventions and, you know, that are still very much so pertinent today, but people that are inventing things now, you know, I was looking for some young people that invented things in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, because I wanted to include them. Had a hard time finding information about that, but, you know, hey, the information is out there, and again, like I said, we couldn't find, and we can't talk about everyone. But, you know, another fun one was Michael Jackson. And everybody like, Michael Jackson. Yes, Michael Jackson. Remember a Smooth Criminal and the gravity-defying shoes? Well, this shoe a cutout in the heel in which, you know, you slide on. And, you know, it's just the whole thing is interesting, but Michael Jackson owns the patent on that shoe. You know, and it's just interesting, but, you know, another fun fact there, you know, Michael, we won't even get into my Michael Jackson thing.
Yeah, I would have never known that without this show right now. That's one of those things that I just kind of wrote off and went into adulthood thinking, it's magic. Like, I just let that one go. Like, yeah, I just learned something relevant here.
William thought that Michael Jackson was like David Blaine this whole time.
And I just let it go and said, I'm going to go through life with that and see what I can do.
Exactly. So, you know, it's just as important that we know that and we understand what's happening and all of that. But, you know, I had to tell you all about that Michael Jackson. I just thought that was extremely interesting. You have Robert Bryant and, you know, chemical engineer who works for NASA in Langley Research Center. And, you know, for this gentleman here, he basically invented a device that can act like muscle and nerves to expand and contract surfaces. And it was named the 2006 NASA Government Invention of the Year. And, again, that's Robert Bryant, B-R-Y-A-N-T. You know, he was in charge of the team that invented soluble amide, the self-bonding thermoplastic that received, you know, an R&D, a Research and Development 100 award for being one of the most significant new technical products of 1994. You know, so it's just, it's interesting. With the invention that he, you know, invented that can act like muscles and nerves, basically it can be attached to a structure to bend it, reduce vibrations, and monitor force. That's wonderful. I mean, some of these people are absolutely brilliant. Yeah, so, you know, just look, you know, for this information, you have Henry Brown. Henry Brown created a strong box, which allowed people to store important information at home. You have George Carruthers, and he invented methods of measuring and detecting ultraviolet light and electromagnetic radiation in space. You have Matthew Cherry, created a vehicle that is the precursor to the modern tricycle, and then created a special fender for streetcars. You know, you have a bunch of people here. You have George Brent. And he was a Harvard-trained dentist, and he invented several items, but importantly...
That was the name of an actor, too, wasn't it? That was the name of an actor, too, wasn't it?
This guy, he created the golf tee. So, you know, it's just interesting. And Jack Johnson, the heavyweight fighter guy.
Oh, I love him. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Jack Johnson, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar with him, one of Raina's favorites here, but he was, you know, an inventor as well. And very, you know, interesting. There was a movie, what was the name of the movie that they made after him?
The Great Black Hope?
Yeah, The Great Black Hope. You know, yeah. good movie. Basically, this gentleman here, he started boxing. He was a boxer. And basically, he was about 6'1", 192 pounds. And
he's a killer.
Exactly. And so, basically, you know, he was arrested for the violation of the Mann Act, which was a law often used to prevent black men from traveling with white women. Okay, and he was one of the guys that openly defied the rules and openly dated white women, you know, which was interesting. And eventually he married a young lady by the name of Lucille, and he was convicted of a crime because he married her. Well, anyway, he left the United States. They fled to Europe, and eventually they came back to the United States. He was put in prison, and while in prison, he found the need for a tool which would help tighten the loosening fastening devices. And he created a tool and patented, calling it a wrench, W-R-E-N-C-H. He invented the wrench, people. So...
Yep.
Yeah, or in my garage,
also,
I call it the squeezer.
Also, if you get an opportunity, check out the movie. James Earl Jones did a really good job. I like that movie.
So. Go ahead, William.
Oh, I was just saying, in my garage, I call it the squeezer. At the there's a movie on this. Is it on, you know, if it's in cable now, should I go find it on DVD?
The movie isn't about, him inventing the wrench, but it's a really good movie nonetheless. It may be actually hard to find, but you might be able to find it on, like, Amazon or eBay or something like that, but... They might actually play it this month on, like, Turner Classic Movies or something along those lines. So check it out. But, I'll let you know if I see it. If I see it coming on anytime, I'll make sure I'll post it on Kim's wall. So.
Ooh, word. All right.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. And we have Thomas Stewart. Thomas Stewart invented the mop. He got tired of scrubbing the floors on his hands and knees. So he invented the mop, an easier, less painful way to clean your floors. So
too bad my grandmother didn't let me use that invention when I was younger. I had to do it on my hands and knees. But, I tried to tell her. I really did. I was like, I'm pretty sure they have mops for these things. And she was like, that's not how you clean the floor.
Oh, yeah. So, it's interesting. You have Valerie Thomas. Interesting young lady. It says here, she started experimenting in 1977 with flat mirrors and concave mirrors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she believed that the images presented in this way basically could provide a more accurate, if not more interesting, manner of representing video data. And so she applied for her patent in 1978, and it was issued in 1980. And basically her invention was similar to the technique of holographic production of image recording, which uses coherent radiation and employs front wave reconstruction techniques, which render the process unfeasible due to the enormous expense and complicated setup. So... basically, in the description of her patent, the process is explained. Optical illusions may be produced by parabolic mirrors, wherein such images produced thereby are possessed by three-dimensional attributes. And to just make a long story short, the illusion transmitter. Look that up and look up Valerie Thomas. She worked for NASA until 1995. And she retired, but her work with the illusion transmitter, it helped develop programs and helped design programs to research Halley's Comet and ozone holes. So, it's just, it's wonderful. She showed that the magic of fascination can often lead to concrete scientific applications for real-world problem solving. So... Yeah. Another name. How about this? Benjamin Thornton. Benjamin Thornton, Thornton. And basically he created a device that could be attached to a telephone and could be set to record a voice message from a caller. And basically he used a clock attachment. The machine could also forward the messages as well as keep track of the time they were made. And it was a predecessor to today's answering machine. How about that?
Wow.
Yeah. Caller ID, call waiting. Now we got the answering machine and your cell phones. It's amazing.
Now we use them to tweet pictures of cat memes. We can use them a bit better.
The highest form of their use, I may add. No, I'm just kidding.
That is too funny, but you have it's interesting. The information that's out there. That's why I tell people go and study up and read up and ideas. Never toss your ideas away. There are ways. But again, you have to be careful. you know, as to, you know, who you share that with. And you have to make sure you get the proper type of lawyer. You have lawyers that specialize in trade patents and copyrights. And if you do have an invention, that's the type of attorney that you definitely you want on your team. You have Robert Pelham, P-E-L-H-A-M. And basically, for this gentleman here, you know, he created a tabulating device and a tallying machine for the United States Census Bureau. So, you know, look up that information there. You know, you have Jan Matt Zelliger. M-A-T-Z-E-L-I-G-E-R. And he revolutionized the shoemaking industry with his automatic.
Yeah, I knew that name was familiar.
Sorry. Oh, that's okay. But yeah, you know, he revolutionized the shoemaking industry with his automatic lasting machine, which could produce significantly more shoes than any human could or any human cobbler could. He increased it by 900 times. And, yeah, I thought that was absolutely amazing. You know, it's interesting. Joseph Lee, he created a bread crumbling machine as well as a bread, an automatic bread making machine. So, you know, you have these people out here. Look up Ernest Just, J-U-S-T. I'm sure Raina knows
who about this. Yeah, I know about him. And you should read his book, The Apollo of Science. This man was—he was something else. he had a fair number of challenges in his life, but a lot of the challenges he had were self-created. But he's a fascinating character. You should check out his book and check out how arrogant he is by just the title. The name of the book is called "The Black Apollo of Science." So if that gives you any indication of what this man thought about himself. that should do it, you know. So check it out. It's a really interesting book. So, I mean, there are parts on the book I got mad. Like I was like, why, why, sir?
Exactly. So you know, it's important. You know, you have Willis Johnson. He created the egg beater and revolutionized the world of cooking. So. You know, Joseph Hawkins, he improved upon the gridiron designs to create metal oven racks. Just a bunch of people out here, you know, for you all to go out and find and, you know, learn about. You have Henry Faulkner, and he created a ventilated shoe to help to minimize excessive sweating as well as the prevention of blisters and sores on your feet. So it's just, you know, the whole thing is interesting. Just go out and understand Joseph Dickinson. He developed, improved, and innovative reed organs. You know, George Crumb, he, believe it or not, created the potato chip. Yeah.
Thank you so much for that invention that you could have kept to yourself, sir. We didn't need that one.
No, we needed that one.
Huh?
The shiny aisle on Walmart is that know, what that right? invention became. It's just glistening with salt.
Exactly. Had he known his invention would be an entire aisle at Walmart, he might have kept it to himself.
Like his invention has influenced the first black lady to have to work a little harder.
Her and the rest of us. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You know, so you have a bunch of people out there, you know, Benjamin Bradley, you know, created the steam engine powerful enough to drive steam-powered warships. You know, get to know who you people are. Miriam Benjamin invented a gong and signal chair for hotels. It's amazing. amazing, amazing, what's that here, Henry Blair, invented a seed planter and a corn harvester. You know, it's amazing. You know, go out here and learn and see what's happening. And again, I just encourage you guys to do your own research on, you know, different innovators and, you know, people. And, oh, okay, I see we have a few callers here. I see Mario. Mario is with us. And I think from 843, is that Deborah?
No, 843, this is Al from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hi, Al. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? I'm great. I just wanted to call and say how much I enjoy the topic of the show, because I'm looking at invent something myself. You know, I already contacted Invent Help, and you know, they already schedule a meeting for me to come in. You know, I don't want to talk too much about it, you know, until I actually get the ball rolling. But this show is inspiring me and motivating me to come up with more ideas. So I just want to say I enjoyed the show, and yeah, keep up the good work.
Yeah, make sure you put those ideas out there. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I was sitting on the couch one night with my mom, and we were eating, and I thought about a fork or something that has like a kind of almost not a completely serrated edge, but more like a salad knife or something, so you could cut your food. Because I'm one of those people who's always cutting my food with my fork. But I found out there's a whole company that makes this, and they make like specialized like salad bowls and everything just for people like me, you know. But I mean, you can make something off of anything. You know, is what that proves to me. So eventually, maybe I'll have a good idea and I'll be able to sell it to people.
Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with Invent Help.
Yeah.
You go to InventHelp.com.
Yeah,
like, yeah, they got different offices in different states, cities. So the closest one to me in South Carolina is in Columbia. So Columbia is where I have to go to the, go to the meeting, and you know, they sit down and talk about my idea, discuss my ideas, and try to get a patent for it, and you know, they set up a portfolio, you know, to shop it around to different companies.
Can you put your computer on mute? I'm not sure who it is. Put your computer on mute, because I am definitely hearing double talk here. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so like I said, you know, I just wanted to call in and, you know, just say I'm enjoying the show. And yeah, it's inspiring, you know, motivating. And hopefully we have more black innovators in the business, you know, which I believe we will, you know. So.
Excellent. I agree with you. You know, I believe we're going to have more black innovators, more black developers, inventors, and, you know.
More politicians, you know, all that. You know, yeah, all that.
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe we'll be adding your name to the list next year.
That's right. You know,
more teachers. You know, not just politicians, but more teachers, more doctors.
Scientists. Exactly.
Scientists. Yep. You know.
Exactly.
I see it coming. It's coming. It's already here. You know. It just. You know, this generation is. You know, this generation and the next generation is going to be a generation, you know, that spark a whole new plateau, you know.
Excellent.
I can't even find a word for it.
yeah, just a whole new, you know, way of thinking, kind of like an enlightenment,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So kind of like a new renaissance. How about that, you know?
And
it's fantastic, and I'm excited for you, dear. I really am. And, you know, go ahead and, you know, like we were saying, you know, get a trade patent and copyright attorney to work with you, get your invention out there. And once you get it out there and everything is in motion and, you know, you get someone to, you know,
make
however
sure
you want
send
to
us
see.
Free whatever you put out, though, so we can review it. We want a free one.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, cool.
Hook us up. Hook us up, and then we can review it, and we can talk about it on the show.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, as long as it's not cutting off poles or anything, we can get along.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the money I make from it, you know, I'll sponsor the non-black believers, the free black free thinkers, you know.
Oh,
I'll put something for them. I know.
I am just thinking about ourselves, trying to get a hookup, and here he is talking about giving us donations. That's so sweet.
Yeah. That's what I mean, because, the radio shows and podcasts, stuff like that, I know it costs money, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It does. It costs money, and, we just want to put it out there and let people know that, there are people out here who care, and, we do care about you guys, and that's why, we sponsor different things. We sponsor this show. We're putting it out there to help, encourage and motivate and enlighten other people, And in the process of putting together these shows, we're enlightened as well, because it's a lot of research that goes into these shows. Some things I knew about, other things not so much. So, I'm learning. And, I get excited when I learn something new. I'm not sure about anyone else, but, I can't wait to tell you guys. I'm running to my notepad, and sometimes I can't even wait that long. I just post it on my Facebook page. If you look at the Black Freethinkers Facebook profile, we have a profile. If you friend me, you'll get a wealth of information. I mean, it's an education in and of itself. Basically, you can find the same information on the Tumblr and the Twitter page as well. You just have to take your time and go through it, because it's a lot of information. I mean, in the past couple of years, I've put out about over 4,000 tweets, and most of them are educational. So,
yeah. Have y'all ever heard of Kickstarter?
Yes, Kickstarter.
Yeah, Kickstarter.
Crowdfunding website.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, that'll be a good tool to use too, Kickstarter.
Yeah, Kickstarter, you have, a chip in, you have all of that. One of the issues is, not to deviate too much off, but one of the issues is, getting people to donate and contribute, and people being hesitant because of what they had to deal with, in the past with other people. And right now, I'm going to hold off on that. We're trying to attain some other things in the background. And we'll be kicking it off again soon, a fundraising campaign. But, and that's for Black Non-Believers of Chicago. For Black Freethinkers, if you all want to contribute to Black Freethinkers, that's a different story. PayPal for that, or the contribution for that, is donate@blackfreethinkers.com. So, if they wanted to give something, or you can just contact me and we can work something out. But, we have some wonderful people. If we have anyone out there that want us to, promote them, that want to buy some ad space, they can do that as well, even though for the most part they do it for free anyway.
Another thing I want to do too is I want to do a documentary on religion. You know what I'm saying? Like the origin of where it came from. I got a few people that I want to be in the documentary. But I was going to use Kickstarter to get the funds for that. And then I was going to, documentary about, where religion came from, break it down in, like, four chapters, like Christianity, Islam, Judaism. I was going to come up with a second documentary talking about, the church, the black church, and I'm going to break that down in different chapters, mental illness in the black church, all the stuff y'all talk about on this show. All the stuff y'all talk about on the show, I was going to put it on a second documentary. And I wanted to have you on it too. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, make sure you contact me. And, you got Raina here. There's Mario.
Yeah, exactly.
We have Alfred. We have And, you know, there are a lot of people. There are quite a few of us. And, you know, we'll be happy to assist you with this. And just, like I said, reach out. You can find the information on the profile page on the Blog Talk. And if you're not a Facebook friend with me, go ahead and friend me on Facebook. That information is on the Blog Talk as well. And, you know, I can connect you with some other folks. You know, I'll be happy to do that. You know? That would be great. So there you go.
I want to get the ball rolling.
Wonderful.
I want to get the ball rolling. You know, so I want to. So, but I'm glad I called and I'm glad I tuned into the show today, and just, you know, keep up the good work. And
don't forget to tell your friends.
We have another 843 on the line. Another 843. Are you there?
Yeah, how you doing? How you guys doing?
Good. May we ask who's calling?
Yes, my name is Ed. I'm in Sumter. Where's the brother from?
I'm from Charleston, Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know what's up there.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty nice down here.
Oh,
where you ladies look?
We got two South Carolina people on the line. Where is Deborah? You know what? And you know, also Frank. We haven't heard from Frank in a while. Where you at, Frank? Love you, darling. But you know, Frank thinks he's the only black non-believer in South Carolina. See, Frank, they proved you wrong today. But so it's
be
just
surprised,
it's amazing. Oh, I think we have Deborah on the line now. Let's see here. Is that
South,
you, Deborah?
The South is in the house. What can I say? South Carolina? I'm kind of close to you. Kind of close.
Come on down. Come on down.
I've been there.
There you go. There you go. And, you know, again, you know, for those of you, especially down there in South Carolina, if you're friends with me, hit my wall, because there are some other African-Americans in South Carolina that really think that they're by themselves. So if you're out, hit my wall. If not so much, or you just don't want that information out there like that, but you don't mind me passing it along, inbox me. And, you know, we can forward it along to a couple of people, because, like I said, especially Frank. Frank thinks he's by himself. Frank is one of our favorite people around here. Frank always gets the party started. You should see some of the pictures he posts up. Hilarious. But, you know, guys, but, yeah, you know, the show today was on black inventors, innovators, pioneers, luminaries. We didn't get a chance to hit everybody, but I think we hit more than enough names to, you know, kind of get your curiosity piqued and to encourage you to go out and do some research and some information. We encourage you guys to go and check out the archives for Black Free Thinkers.
And I just wanted to say, if you guys are interested in luminaries and other luminaries that weren't mentioned, Harry Belafonte made a very good speech at the NAACP Image Awards that you should probably check out, where he was talking about essentially what's talked about in the book The New Jim Crow, talking about, you know, the number of black people incarcerated currently, many of them for nonviolent drug offenses or nonviolent crimes. You know, there's also, in another historic sort of activist that I can think of is Paul Robeson, if you guys are interested. Paul had a very interesting life, so check it out.
And another interesting tidbit about Paul Robeson is he was friends with Albert Einstein. Those of you do some research on Albert Einstein and his relationship with the black community, you'll be amazed. Absolutely. He even had a black girlfriend. Somebody put your computer on mute, please. So, you know, do some research on that and find that out. Interesting, you know, about the new Jim Crow. Raina and I are definitely going to do that show this year. We were trying to get to it last year. Just life got in the way. And so we will be doing that this year. We will be reviewing Michelle Alexander's book and bringing that into play. And, you know, as Raina was talking about the drug laws, you know, not too long ago, the Department of Justice basically ruled that, you know, the jail sentences for crack versus the jail sentences for cocaine, you know, basically they were just out of whack. You know, the gentleman selling crack got more jail time than the one selling cocaine, when essentially it's pretty much the same thing. And so, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about that. I posted an article on my Facebook wall today in which one of the drug kingpins thanked the United States, you know, legislature for keeping drugs illegal because it made him a billionaire.
Right.
So, our politicians, I found that quite
And there's a lot of issues that you can talk about with the relation to drugs and drug policy. I mean, think about it. The way our drug policy is affects our neighbors, namely Mexico, you know, where right now vigilantes are taking to the streets because they can't depend on their government to crack down on trafficking and drug-related crime. You know?
Yes.
And a lot of these border towns are extremely dangerous. I mean, American tourists disappear in a lot of these places every year because these places are probably worse than a lot of places in the old Wild West, because at least in some of the old Wild West towns, they actually made you check your guns, you know what I mean, before you entered the town, you know?
Exactly.
And
you know,
drug guy.
Go ahead, honey. Go ahead.
That drug guy, if he wants to go legit, he can just invest in privatized prisons. You know, he'll still benefit from the exact
same
policy.
And speaking of that, there was a story out this week in the Huffington Post about how a lot of these privatized prisons lack running water and functioning toilets.
And in fact,
in one prison, they had prisoners who were using bags, plastic bags, to defecate in.
Ohio.
Yeah, I posted that on my wall, and to kind of piggyback on that, I know we're totally off, but that's why I ended that and let you guys know, and we're just going to talk a little bit about news stories. But basically, I posted that on my wall, and that's the reason why I keep telling people with this privatized jail system, some of these companies are publicly traded. So do some research on this, you know, especially with, you know, what's happening now, especially with some of these people that are railing out against immigration. You know, there's a lot of money to be made for the people that house them before they're deported. There's a lot of money to be made when they put these people in jail, and mostly in private jails. So do your research. Understand.
And then, the human rights of these people are being violated, and whether or not, no matter how you feel about criminals, you know, we have an obligation to at least give them the basics of life and healthy conditions to live in, you know.
Exactly. And that kind of, you know, it's just interesting. But, yeah, you know, there are a lot of different factors in that equation that we definitely need to look at. I put a story up about how there's a cult in Mexico that are creating sex slaves for Christ. And, you know,
wow. See, a lot of people are, if I may interject, a lot of people are, like you're saying, they're not doing research. A lot of the wealthy people in the United States are moving to different parts of Mexico. They have cities, a friend of mine was telling me the other day, they have cities in Mexico that look like Manhattan or, say, Chicago. Metropolises, and, you know, that's part of their end thing, you know, sex slaves, the old Roman laws, let's just say, you know. Roman soldiers, you know, after war, during war, they would, before or after they killed the opposers, they would rape them. So those kind of things are commonplace, you know, even though they're kind of getting off the subject. But overall, my question, back to inventors, a sister of mine, she created a few projects, And what happened was, one of the main ones was stolen by a lawyer. So if you guys have any information in reference to, she can prove that the patent was hers. She's having trouble getting representation on it. It's been out for about, I think, about 4 or 5 years. And, you know, she basically wants to, you know, get her just due from it. It's like the sister who wrote The Matrix. You know, she won her case.
Yeah.
And she's received some money, but she didn't receive, I think she received more, like a third of it, considering, you know, The Matrix is like a multi-billion dollar, you know.
I'm
sorry, but the that Matrix story has been debunked several times. But I just wanted to interject and say that that soldiers raping people before they, you know, in wartime is not a Roman thing. It's something that's been, you know, seen in various cultures throughout time.
Yeah.
So anyway, if anyone else wants to say something, go ahead.
Right. Well, you know, it's just like, you know, again, I just encourage people to get out there, research, you know, get the right people in your corner. If you have an invention or, you know, like with invention with a sister, put it on paper, draw it out. And, you know, the least you can do for yourself is the poor man's copyright. Mail it to yourself
right.
And never open it. Okay, and before you take it to someone else to, you know, to look at it, so at least you'll have that.
Would that cover
she has, Library of Congress and everything is, her patent is secure. It's just the
right.
fact that, I guess by way of him investing money.
Right, okay.
She had a stroke, so she was in a coma for like 3 or 4 weeks or something. I don't know if he got wind of it. But anyway, the product is on the market.
Okay.
And she's been having trouble getting representation in the issue as far as, you know, achieving her due from her product that she created.
Okay. Go ahead and hit me up on my inbox, you know, after the show. And,
okay.
you know, I'll call my sister. And see if she knows if anyone, she's in New York, but I can see if she knows of anyone down in that area. And, you know, see if we can at least kind of steer you somewhere in the right direction. But, again, we thank everybody for calling in to the show today. Again, this is Black Free Thinkers, and we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. Next Sunday's show, we are going to talk about domestic terrorism and tyranny. We're going to talk about lynch mobs. We're going to talk about white entitlement and privilege and insecurity. We're going to talk about Rosewood. We're going to talk about Tulsa. We're going to talk about all of those different things. But in the meantime, we're going to sign out with Mr. Father Teresa and his Black Freethinkers theme. I hope you enjoy.
Black free thinkers, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. Free thought, we don't walk by faith in the lost mind state because it's not quite safe. We don't recruit, we're not peers from a church, so don't be spooked, we're not here to convert. The only truth is not pulled from a text. Show me proof that's not good after death. This is the challenge to think for yourself. Break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through. A venue for community and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. The next tree branch is Rainer and it's best you listen to reason, science, and science. skepticism. It's loaded with straight facts, inspiring and dope. She can make Bill Nye retire his lab coat. Humans are hilarious, and every other Friday I'd like to hear commentary on culture, people. So I hit up Super Mario and bring in Emmeline to discuss why we're capable of ultra evil. It's normal for my brain to have a two-way street, but if there's collisions, well then you got to just mention it. And don't be afraid of where the truth may lead, ignoring your position of cognitive dissonance. When Father Teresa preaches, it's hard to stop. So Kim paired me up with Alfred in the barbershop. I have extended family in all these places now, as the free thought tree pollinates around. Yeah. This is the challenge to think for yourself. Break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through. A venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. Black Freethinker, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. We don't walk by faith, and I lost my state, 'cause it's not quite safe.